Welcome to WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. I'm Mark Gillespie. Support for WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings comes from Kilhoman, Isla's farm distillery. Each month, we bring together a tasting panel of whiskey lovers to nose and taste whiskeys of all types. The one thing they have in common, these aren't the ultra-rare exclusive whiskeys that you'll probably never find on most store shelves or behind most bars. These are what I like to call accessible whiskeys, the ones almost everyone can get their hands on. This month, I'm in Victoria, British Columbia for the Victoria Whiskey Festival, and our panel will be tasting some of the whiskeys that did very well in the 2012 Canadian Whiskey Awards, which were presented during the festival. We'll meet this month's panel and get started right after this.
Hello, I'm John McClellan, Distillery Manager at Kilhoman, which is Isla's youngest distillery. We're proud to bring you this episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. If you can make it to Isla, we'd love to see you at the distillery. But until then, you can visit us on the web at kilhomandistillery.com or get a taste of Isla with a dram of Kilhoman from Isla's farm distillery.
Let's meet our tasting panel on location here in Victoria, British Columbia. We should say Victoria, beautiful British Columbia, which is sort of almost required by law. We are finishing up the Victoria Whiskey Festival with our session for this month. Let's meet the panel. Joining me now from my left to right, you're not going to be able to see left to right, but I'm going to do this just way for my own benefit. Graham McKenney is a whiskey blogger along with our second panelist. And welcome, Graham. And tell me about yourself and your experience with whiskey.
Well, it started off with an introduction from my father coming out of high school with Irish whiskey. And it's been a wonderful ride right from through Scotch whiskey, Canadian bourbons, you name it.
And you guys blog along with your partner, Joanne McGinnis, who is sitting next to you in the middle of our tasting panel. And welcome, Joanne. And tell me about yourself and your experience with whiskey and where you two blog together so that we can get some publicity for your blog as well.
Oh, thank you for having us. I guess my whiskey journey began in a very young age. Started with Canadian whiskeys, just having it, you know, in our homes, drinking what Dad had in the whiskey cabinet, so to speak, then progressing to the other whiskeys of the world, was very much enamored with Scotch for the longest time, and then started to discover the world of bourbons, other world whiskeys from India, Sweden, I mean, just about everywhere. Then the desire to start writing about it came about after starting our own whiskey society in our hometown of St. John, New Brunswick. And it's just been a wonderful adventure ever since.
And where do you two blog?
It's called the perfectwhiskeymatch.blogspot.ca. And we write about everything. We write about not only whiskeys, but the experiences and the stories behind the whiskeys.
And let's talk about St. John's for a bit, because that's about as far from Victoria as you can get pretty much in Canada, at least heading east, right?
It's literally the polar opposite, yeah.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we're on the right coast. Victoria's on the left. So it's been a great trip coming out here, and we're having a great time, certainly.
Well, thank you both for joining us for the panel. Our third panelist comes from just south of Victoria in Seattle. Hannah Raskin is a writer that I met up here last year for Seattle Weekly, which when I was living in Anchorage and going down to Seattle occasionally for weekends and for business trips and stuff, I used to pick up Seattle Weekly all the time because that was the guide to what's going on in Seattle. Welcome, Hannah. Tell us about your experiences with whiskey and about Seattle as a whiskey town.
Sure. Great question. So my first whiskey was probably a bottle of Old Crow that we drank when I was working on a dude ranch in Montana one summer. We had to make that bottle last. I probably then learned a little bit more after that. I moved down south, so I got to know bourbon fairly well, as well as a lot of whiskeys that don't end up in any commercial bottle. After that, I was in Texas, which was really fun because I got to cover sort of the beginnings of their whiskey scene and their incipient bourbon industry as well. Been in Seattle for about 2 years, and you know, it's a great question. I mean, most of our whiskey ends up in cocktails. Seattle is a cocktail town. So we do have some micro distillers who are fooling around with whiskey for sure. But you encounter whiskey most probably in your Manhattan or other cocktail glass. So
And the one distillery in Washington that a lot of folks would know about is Dry Fly, but that's out on the eastern side, out near Spokane.
Spokane, right? Yes. Woodinville Whiskey Company is the closest to Seattle that's producing a fairly good product.
And we have four very good products in front of us that we're going to be tasting this month. And for the first time, we're doing an all-Canadian whiskey panel, which is very appropriate since we're here in Victoria. And all of these whiskeys did very well during the Canadian Whiskey Awards, which Joanne and I were pleased to be part of the judging panel for. And tell me about your experience with that, because I think this was the first time you'd judged a whiskey competition, right?
To this extent, yes. It was almost an overwhelming experience for the first couple of weeks, receiving 60 whiskey samples and knowing that you have a very tight deadline to try and score all of them. Seemed a little overwhelming at first, but then once I got into it and actually just relaxed and just, you know, went with my nose and my instinct, it just became a very easy and quite enjoyable experience to try.
Well, let's start off with our first whiskey. It's a Gibson's Finest, 12 years old. This is, of course, bottled at 40% ABV. It is bottled and produced in Oakville, Ontario, by William Grant & Sons. And Gibson's is sort of one of those flagship whiskeys that a lot of Canadians grow up with, because it's been around for decades and decades and is considered a classic in many Canadian whiskey circles. We'll also talk about this in a bit, but there's also a certain amount of inferiority complex that Canadians have about Canadian whiskeys. And we're trying to resolve some of that with the Canadian Whiskey Awards, and just point out the fact that there are excellent whiskeys being produced here in Canada that deserve a lot of credit. So while the panel is nosing the Gibson's Finest 12-year-old, let me run through the procedure for scoring. If you're listening to WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings for the first time, the procedure is that we score on a 0-5 basis with half points acceptable, and they'll score with water and without water, one composite score for each whiskey. When we're done with the four whiskeys on this flight, we will take the scores, average them together during a short break, and then come back and report the mean score for each whiskey from all of our panelists. They do not discuss the actual score they're giving each whiskey, though they can discuss their tasting notes. The idea here is to avoid any kind of peer influence that might affect ratings if one judge feels particularly strongly about a whiskey either way. That way it doesn't have an effect on the other judges. And with that said, let's talk about the nose on the Gibson's Finest 12-year-old. What are you getting on this one?
Well, personally, I get a fair bit of spice and pepper sort of right up front, right on the front of the nose. It's and it's a nice little bit of vanilla. Not sugary, though. It's a little prickly.
I'm picking up a fair amount of sweetness. It may be because we're talking on a Sunday morning, but I'm getting a whole lot of brunch in here. Yeah. I mean, there's I'm smelling, you know, you get kind of that buttery pancake, French toast, cinnamon vibe on the nose for me. And again, I should say, we did a lot of tasting last night, so if my palate's blown out, I wouldn't be surprised. But
one of the things that I really enjoy about the Gibson's is you need to coax out the smells. And so it always starts as a very light smell for myself, and then it sort of begins to morph into a honey clover with some nice spice in the background, but not spicy in the sense of pepper. It's more very subtle nutmegs or just a hint of spice in the back.
Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and taste it and see what you get on the taste.
I think it's got a little bit more pop at the end than I would have anticipated off the nose. I mean, there is that little bit of kick, because when I first hit my lips, I thought, well, I've served this to my grandma. I mean, it had a really nice sweetness that I expected, but there certainly was a little kick on the back end.
I actually found more of that sugary sweetness that you were talking about on the palate than I did on the nose. I mean, like you say, the brown sugars and the pancakes with the maple syrup. It's great.
Yeah, I get hints of almost a creamy type. I don't want to say a custard, but it's that sweet, creamy.
It's buttery.
It's very buttery. It's almost a little bit oily in the mouth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it, what stands out to you in terms of the spices, in terms of the flavors?
I think for myself, this is one of those whiskeys that was in my dad's cabinet. So, I mean, I've been familiar with Gibson's even in high school when I probably shouldn't have been. But I think you described it best. It's one of the flagship Canadian whiskeys. From a blogging perspective, this is the one that a lot of UK bloggers recognize as a Canadian whiskey and are willing or would like to be able to try if they had the opportunity.
Which they don't because it's not exported very much.
Correct.
I think just a little bit to some of the border states in the U.S. and maybe just a few drops overseas because of the Grants connection, but not much more than that.
No, it's a highly, what's the word I'm looking for, sought after whiskey as far as being able to try it.
Hmm. I don't know whether this is sort of the Canadian history of mixing, you know, the classic rye and ginger that so many people have, which, you know, rye, Canadian whiskey and ginger ale. But for me, especially on the finish, it is a little gingery. It's, you know, the back corners of the palate are have that nice little ginger prickle, if you will.
Any thoughts, Hannah?
No, I think some of the baking spices we've talked about are fairly prevalent. I mean, this seems like something a chef could go to town with. I mean, I would soak a cake in this. And
let's try it with some water and see if water changes it any and opens up the nose and changes the taste a little bit. While they're doing their nosing with water, I want to thank the folks at the Hotel Grand Pacific here in Victoria for opening up a conference room for us to be able to record this month's episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings and providing the glassware and basically making it very easy and very simple for us to actually put this panel together and do this on a Sunday morning on somewhat short notice. But I want to thank the management and the staff here at the Hotel Grand Pacific for making us welcome this weekend. So what do we get with water?
Personally, as you'd expect, it really knocks the edges off. It brings out that butteriness that we were talking about earlier. It makes it, it really emphasizes the sweetness. It
very much so. I think what, to me, initially seems sort of off-putting butteriness becomes almost suppleness when you add water.
Yeah.
That's the perfect description right there, actually. Yeah.
We're done here.
Yeah,
I like that. The word is suppleness.
Yeah,
the water really tames the roughness around the edges and kind of gives it a much more flavorful profile as far as creamy.
There's a descriptor that I usually try to avoid with Canadian whiskeys, actually, because it's so stereotypically Canadian. But, you know, that maple, that real strong maple, maple sweetness all of a sudden is just bang right up front.
Yep.
Well, let's move on to our next whiskey. This is one that sort of fits the classic definition that people think of with Canadian whiskeys being a rye whiskey, although not all Canadian whiskeys have a lot of rye content. A lot have more corn than rye. But this one is Century Reserve. It's the Lot 1525 that did very well in the Canadian Whiskey Awards, and they say very straight on the label, Canadian Rye Whiskey, Canadien, with the French labeling in there, of course. But Century Reserve is distilled by Highwood Distillers in Alberta in the Calgary area, and it's 40% alcohol by volume. It's actually distilled, I think, about maybe half an hour or so south of Calgary, in between Lethbridge and Calgary. And Lethbridge is where I believe Canadian Mist might be distilled. I could be wrong on that, but I know there's a distillery in Lethbridge as well. No, I'm wrong on that. That's where Black Velvet is produced, at Lethbridge in Alberta, which is right in the heart of the breadbasket of Canada, in the heart of farm country, where a lot of the barley, rye, and corn is grown, and wheat, of course. So let's try the Lot 1525 and see what we get on the nose.
Mark, did you say what kind of barrel this was put in?
I do not know what kind of barrels. They never really quite say. I would assume there's a lot of ex-bourbon in this, but they don't get a lot of sherry casks out there, so I'm assuming this is pretty much ex-bourbon.
Great.
Our next whiskey will be a lot easier to talk about the barrel sourcing on this one, but let's give that a few seconds here and talk about the nose for the Lot 1525.
Oh,
Well, unlike the Gibsons, this one just grabs you by the nose and pulls you right into the glass. It's I personally find it very aromatic, and there's no, you know, there's no trying to guess what it is. It just hits you heavy on the nose. It's spicy. It's sweet, but not candy sweet. It's just this very pleasant, almost, I don't want to say floral because that's probably not right, but it's just fresh. It's a very nice, fresh sweetness.
Yeah, actually, I really, in the back, I mean, as you'd expect from rye, you know, peppery, but really the thing that's really standing out for me the most right here is the cereal. I really enjoy rye bread and baking in general. So, I mean, this takes me back to a nice fresh loaf of rye bread. It's gorgeous.
Hannah?
Yeah, I think rye bread is, I definitely pick up that there, but it does seem to me, especially in comparison to the Gibsons, it's just a little darker, a little drier, not necessarily that it's not sweet, but it just seems a little bit rougher than the first one.
So let's go ahead and taste it.
Yeah, I'm getting more kind of licorice-y bit on there.
Anise,
right. And I keep saying the word darker, and in color it is not, you know, in appearance much darker than the first whiskey we sampled. But I keep thinking of blackened things.
Especially if you've ever had that sort of traditional Dutch licorice, those tiny little powdery.
Yes.
Yeah, cubes.
That's right
time.
There.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Not petrol, but almost. It's got that little bit of an edge, especially in the back corners. That bitterness in the back corners from the
kind
wood.
Kind of grapefruit pith bitterness that kind of gets you at the back.
Yeah, it's not a very friendly whiskey. I mean,
it's an aggressive.
It is much more aggressive than the Gibsons.
And shorter on the finish. Mm-hmm. I would say
much shorter
on the finish. It's delicious, and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder if water changes that. Let's add a few drops and see what happens. I'm seeing smiles.
Yeah.
Does water help this one?
I think so. I think it smooths it out.
Yeah, that rough petrol note is gone. For sure. And it really turned that grapefruit citrus to more of a bit of a lemon custard almost. Mm. It certainly eased it. But as you'd expect, it certainly didn't increase the finish by any means. Mm. But it's softer on the palate now.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with Graham. I could smell it even before I got the nose in my glass, so to speak. And then with the water, I had to go just a little bit deeper. So all of a sudden, it kind of subdued everything, including the spices, especially for me. I no longer smell like the anise or the
No, I think
upfront.
It really sort of eased it back from that tough European licorice to a Twizzler. It's all of a sudden kind of much easier to taste.
I all of a sudden have a really big urge to be back home on the deck with the barbecue going in a pair of flip-flops. Like, this is a lovely summer
sipping,
evening whiskey.
Sipping
yeah.
whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd be very comfortable in St. John's in flip-flops on the back porch in the middle of January right now.
Although the barbecue's still getting a lot of use.
Yeah. There's nothing like winter barbecue.
True.
Let's move on and go ahead and put down your scores for the Lot 1525 Century Reserve. Our third whiskey is uniquely Canadian in more ways than one. It is the 40 Creek Confederation Oak Reserve. One, John Hall does unique things with whiskey anyway. He actually distills his grains separately, ages them separately, and then marries them together instead of creating a mash bill for 40 Creek like many distillers would with all the grains distilled at the same time. But this one is uniquely Canadian as well because Its Confederation Oak title refers to the fact that the oak actually came from Canada. And it's one of the few times that Canadian oak has been used for maturing whiskey. And I think this is the second release on Confederation Oak. And when I tried the first release, it was really interesting because, as I said, we don't get Canadian oak used for aging whiskey very often. And I know John had to have it the barrels custom made for him. But that makes this 100% Canadian because the grains, the water, everything came from Canada, in opposition to using ex-bourbon barrels that get shipped up north from the States. This has won awards in the past and did very well in the Canadian Whiskey Awards. Let's get the nose on Confederation Oak and see what Canadian wood does to a whiskey.
The first thing that comes to mind is just amped up compared to what we've tasted so far. Everything immediately sort of hits you and that much stronger.
Certainly not hiding that wood character. I mean, this is a walk in the woods for sure.
When I was talking with John about this second release, it turns out he reused the barrels from the first batch because the 3 years or so that they spent in there didn't take any character out of the wood at all, and the wood was still very fresh and very usable, so he actually reused those barrels. So these are actually used Canadian oak barrels. So that may have made this a little bit smoother than the original. It's interesting to see whether that first batch took any of the wood character out of those barrels and may have had an impact on the second batch.
It's funny. There's a definite oak, but it's not oaky. You know, it's not overpowering by any means. It's very well balanced. More creamy as well, personally. Anyways, I find it's very creamy and smooth.
Yeah, a little bit of citrus as well, a little orange oil maybe.
I have to say, if we're comparing one towards the other, I'm glad we did this one third. It's, you know, the sense of smell seems to be awakened all of a sudden by what I'm getting in my glass with this one. And it is a very aromatic whiskey that just seems to take you on a really interesting little journey. You start at one angle, and then all of a sudden you're just sort of brought along. I like your walk in the woods. I think that's a perfect. It's very earthy, but not necessarily woody. It's quite nice, actually.
I want to say before we even taste it, 40 Creek was kind of my find of last year's festival. We don't get, or, you know, we don't even look that much for Canadian whiskey in the States. And one of my prerogatives of being a food writer and working in newspapers, I get to keep a liquor cabinet in my office. And I have been pushing 40 Creek on all my, you know, coworkers and editors. And it has become, it's the Barrel Select, which is a great buy. Everyone loves it. So.
And I will second that. The Barrel Select, I've been in liquor stores before and seen people looking over the Canadian whiskey shelves and recommended 40 Creek Barrel Select to them as not only just a good value, but a really good whiskey to begin with. And I've even gone so far as to give them my business card and say, if you don't like this one, I'll give you your money back.
Wow.
And I'll pay them out of my pocket. Because if I recommend it, I'll stand behind it to somebody like that. And I've gotten emails back saying, you nailed it. We love this stuff.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I've never had to shell out a dime yet, which is why I can say that.
I think it's a great bottle for people who are at all skeptical about Canadian whiskey. And certainly in the States, there are plenty of them. I think it's a great introduction.
Well, it's not just Americans that are skeptical. It's Canadians that are skeptical.
I
want
to
get into this because you get this. We always get this image of, or at least this stereotype of Canadian whiskey as being really light, really thin, and
flavorless,
yeah. But we've seen with these three whiskeys so far and with the fourth one that's coming up that is really not the case. That's an old, outdated stereotype.
Very much so.
And these whiskeys really deserve more attention than they get from whiskey connoisseurs both in Canada and the U.S. And the shortest lines last night during the Victoria Whiskey Festival were at the Canadian whiskey tables because Canadians just don't seem to appreciate what you have up here in terms of really good locally produced Canadian whiskeys.
Yeah, I think like anything, there's ebbs and flows, and we're just sort of standing at the end of the diving board for a Canadian whiskey renaissance. I think John Hall has a lot to do with that. Could be coincidence that his releases have sort of sparked a resurgence in love of Canadian whiskey. But the snowball's getting bigger as it rolls downhill, I think.
Let's go ahead and add our water to this and see how the taste changes with water.
Oh, I never tasted it with
water. Oh, well, go right ahead first. I'm sorry, we were talking. And if you haven't tasted it, go ahead.
I have to say, one of the things that I overheard a lot last night standing in lines was you could see people looking over at the Canadian whiskey tables because there were no lines and saying, oh, it's Canadian, and walking away. And so there was a few times when I'd actually pull people in and say, oh, no, you got to give this a try. Just come on over. Mm-hmm. And it would almost start a little bit of a snowball effect, as Graham would say. Then, you know, one person would try it and then go, hey, John, come on over and try this. Like, mm-hmm. So it was kind of nice to kind of draw a few people in and just say, you really should take it just a moment to try this.
I think what's so great, too, is not just the quality of the Canadian whiskeys, but as we've seen, the diversity. I mean, they're not all going after just one single, you know, identity, which is terrific.
So how does water affect this one?
This is the first one I preferred without water. I liked it before. I felt like the water actually kind of broke it up. I feel like it doesn't cohere as nicely with the water.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I agree.
It does very well on its own without it.
Without any water. Yep. All of a sudden it seems a bit fragmented or you know, it's just not as... I don't want to say well put together, but it just, it seems to fall apart, especially on the finish.
Mm-hmm. It can hold its own, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and write down the scores for 40 Creek Confederation Oak Reserve. And our final whiskey points out one of the uniquenesses of Canadian whiskey is that in that distillers are allowed to add flavorings if they want to up to a certain level. And this one is... interesting. It's Alberta Premium Dark Horse, which did win some awards at the Canadian Whiskey Awards, and it's produced by Alberta Distillers in Calgary. And what makes it unusual is that it has sherry added to it, a small percentage of sherry that gives it that really dark richness. But when I tasted it, I was getting notes that were very similar to a lot of sherry cask single malts. And the sherry influence on this is apparent, especially in the color. It's virtually black, almost Loch Dew-like in its darkness, but as far as I'm concerned, a lot better than Loch Dew in terms of taste. So I hammer on Loch Dew with, I think, good reason. It was really one of the truly god-awful whiskeys that ever came out of Scotland. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think you'll have any disagreement in that.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, there are Loch Dew fans out there, but few and far between. But let's get back to Alberta Premium Dark Horse right now. This one's the strongest one of the bunch. It's bottled at 45% ABV, and the label indicates that it was designed for more of the connoisseur drinker who wants a little stronger, more aggressive taste, which is why we're tasting it last. So tell me what you get on the nose, first of all, and then on the taste.
I love this just because, as you were saying, you know, in the comparison to a lot of single malts, if you can imagine all the great things about sherried single malts, the nutty, the nuttiness, the cloves, the sort of Christmas cake, take that and add a real lovely, soft, peppery element that comes from the rye. Like, that's one of the things that I really like about rye whiskeys is that it's a little complex and it's you don't get that rounded sweetness that you get from corn whiskeys. Like it's got a little bite. And so if you add those two together, this is, very enjoyable.
On the nose, there's definitely, I imagine from the sherry cask, there is sort of a plumminess that's, and some of that dried fruit as well. But I'd still get butteriness, almost a specifically like a movie popcorn butteriness.
Oh, wow. That's a really interesting description. Yeah. The first thing I notice is obviously a higher ABV. The alcohol just kind of gives it a slight burn, but then you kind of sit into, a lot more spicy as far as the other three we've just tried, and it's you can almost tell even before it hits your lips, it's going to warm you. It's just really, really very nice on the nose.
Yeah, it's not going to go with your barbecue.
No.
Definitely not. And to that, I mean, we. Being from the East Coast, we left 2 feet of snow. We spend a lot of time in the woods with the dogs and a pair of snowshoes on. And this is comfort in the flask. Like this is warming, belly warming. Yeah.
There you go. It's the comfort food of Canadian whiskeys.
Yeah. I would trademark that real quickly, and before they, you might be able to sell it to the folks at Beam, which owns Alberta Distillers. They might be very interested in that tagline. But let's add some water. Since this is stronger, perhaps a little water might help on this one.
Oh, yeah. I'm always interested in the chemistry perspective of water. That's my actual background in my other job. And, you know, it's always very fascinating to watch what water does to some of these chemical compounds. Right on the get-go, it's so much more softer all of a sudden. It's not that aggressive spice right on the nose anymore. I can go a little bit deeper and give it a nice smell.
While you were doing that, Graham was doing the old trick of splashing a little on his hands and rubbing it together and to get the alcohol off and then get the nose in there to see what you get. What did you get?
Personally, that's always it's kind of like a litmus test for me, because that if real woody compounds are going to come out, they're going to come out on my hands, and that's not it still sticks with that it's that lovely sherried sweetness as opposed to something that's over oaked, which just adds to the balance. I think personally, it's not over oaked despite the sherry cask. That's great.
I think it does well with the water. I almost felt badly about it. It's like, you know, putting a leash on your dog because it's doing really well beforehand, but I think it does nicely.
Yeah. Okay, let's write down the scores now for Alberta Premium Dark Horse. And we will take a short break now that we've completed our flights and come back, add up all the scores, and come out with the winner, or at least the ratings for this month from the tasting panel. You're listening to WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings, coming to you from the Victoria Whiskey Festival in Victoria, British Columbia. When the legends of whiskey have something to say, you'll hear it each week on WhiskeyCast.
Us Baptist just makes it for municipal purposes only. I keep a cough all the time.
From Kentucky to Scotland. And everywhere in between.
What's Daddy's favorite whiskey?
Our Big.
It's an award winner. It's gone out of my head.
With the latest on new releases, whiskey events from around the world, tasting notes, and surprises along the way.
When you leave here today, you will all be feeling and looking 5 years younger. I come here twice each day. I'm 127.
I'm Mark Gillespie. Join us each week for the best in cask strength conversation and become part of our worldwide community of whiskey lovers. You can download WhiskeyCast at the iTunes Music Store or at WhiskeyCast.com. Welcome back to WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings from the Victoria Whiskey Festival. Our tasting panel has spoken, and the results are fairly close now. We actually had a tie for the number one whiskey. Both the 40 Creek Confederation Oak and the Alberta Premium Dark Horse came out with a median score of 4.
Oh, wow.
The Gibson's Reserve, or the Gibson's Finest 12-year-old, had a 3.2. And the 1525 Century Reserve from Highwood Distillers had a 3 average. So do these scores surprise you at all? I know that your scoring was pretty consistent among all of you for this one, but Graham, you liked the Alberta Premium the best, right?
I do. For some reason, I'm very passionate about 40 Creek Whiskey, but there's something that is so comforting and new, I guess, is probably the best way to put it, from the Dark Horse. Yeah.
And the two of you both scored the 40 Creek the highest in yours. What stood out for you on that one?
I think from my perspective, just having, you know, Canadian whiskeys in our home, I just love the fact that 40 Creek is an innovative whiskey. And it's just unlike any other Canadian whiskey on the market right now. And I can't help but be impressed by it every time he comes out with something.
For me, I mean, it had a complexity. It's the whiskey I would want to drink again. But as Joanne said, we're new friends here. As Joanne said, the philosophy behind it probably swayed me too. It's coming from the States, and watching the bourbon industry and its pride, it's wonderful to see that same sort of patriotism north of the border.
Did you learn anything from this?
Personally, I always learn something when there's a lineup of whiskeys head-to-head, especially Canadian whiskeys, because as far as my experience is concerned, it's only been the past few years that we've really been tasting Canadian whiskeys quite seriously. So, anytime you put four whiskeys next to one another, I learn something.
I think for me, had I not had the Century against the others, I probably would have, I don't want to say liked it more. Everything is mood dependent. I think had I, come home from a hard day's work and I was looking for something that would just kind of grab me by the nose and take me in my glass, and like she said, a little bit more of an aggressive profile, I may have scored that one higher on its own. But because I had to compare it, I guess, to the other ones on the panel, I'm a little surprised it didn't do as well for me as I thought it would.
Again, I think this exercise was a great reminder of the importance of context. Two of these, the Highwood and the Alberta, I'd had in seminars yesterday and like them better today. And it's really, it's a great reminder that if you think a whiskey isn't working for you, you might just need to try it another day or in conjunction with another whiskey. So if you think it's not the right whiskey, it may just not be the right time.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for joining me for this month's episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. I hope you guys had as much fun as I did. Thanks again for doing this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Once again, our tasting panel members this month were Hannah Raskin, Joanne McGinnis, and Graham McKinney. Now, if you'd like to be on the panel for an upcoming episode, you don't work in the whiskey industry, and you have Skype on your computer, just send an email to comments@whiskeycast.com, and please put tasting panel in the subject line. We'll add you to the list for one of our Skype-connected panels. Support for WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings comes from Kilhoman, Isla's Farm Distillery, on the web at kilhomandistillery.com. Special thanks to the organizers and volunteers of the Victoria Whiskey Festival and the Hotel Grand Pacific in Victoria for their help in producing this month's tasting panel. WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.